Welcome to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah, an IFS-informed trauma recovery coach. This show features interviews from guests all around the world as they share their impactful stories and deliver hope and inspiration through their personal post-traumatic growth. We explore and discuss resources and coping strategies to support the survivor community to thrive in their own healing journeys. Enjoy. So welcome back to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah, and I have with us today, Jimmy Toro. Jimmy brings his inspirational story of healing from extreme trauma, both childhood and adult years of hell. He talks about pushing through your fears and facing your dragons, turning your trauma into power. In his new book, Heal, Jimmy uses his art and stories to explain the realities of childhood trauma, its physical and mental effects, the suppression of memories and how they can resurface. And he explains the complex realities and the ugly side of recovery while bringing hope to those who suffer. Jimmy is an American contemporary, internationally acclaimed artist, author, and founder of the nonprofit Rescue 11, whose mission is to protect children against predators. He's a composer and a musical producer. He's spoken at numerous events and mental health panels, and he also has created arts for various charity-related projects, such as the Boys and Girls Club of America, Make-A-Wish Foundation, Habitat for Humanity, and more. Jimmy Toro, thank you so much for being here with us. We are so honored and privileged to have you here today. What a story. Tell us more about this journey. You've gone from childhood torture, so much abuse. You've faced what you call facing your fears and facing your dragons. And now here you are, this powerful artist giving back, using your gifts to help people who are healing. So tell us more about your journey and how you got here.
Sure. Childhood abuse is a very interesting subject. There are different types of abusers out there. There's the classic abuser, maybe domestic violence, you know, dad beats his kid type of thing, right? Then the abuse gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And when it gets worse and worse and worse, often many of these abusers join their little organizations. Mm. And one of the classic organizations in that really awful realm are ritualistic type of abuse situations. If you think of like the Ku Klux Klan, where they all dress in their white robes and they do their rituals and this and that, imagine taking that south even further into the purpose of their rituals are to abuse children, even kill them. Mm. And they're a bunch of sadists. I mean, the definition of a sadist is somebody who enjoys inflicting pain on another. And these are the worst sadists in that they enjoy inflicting awful, awful pain on little children. Mm. They're like the ultimate cowards because little children can't fight back. Right. They can't fight back physically or mentally. Mm-hmm. And so when I was from about age 3 to age 8, I was one of those kids who was involved in this ritualistic, satanic type of sexual torture. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible what they get away with. It's incredible the fact that these types of groups often exist right in your town and you don't even know it. Mm-hmm. And people find that amazing. It's like, how could people do such awful things right in my town and get away with it and not know about it?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes the politicians in the town are part of it. Sadly enough, sometimes members of the police force are in on it. Sometimes not, of course. They're very good at hiding it. Mm. And the worst thing for them is to get caught. Mm. It's fascinating. I'll kind of cover this broadly. We can get into it more if you want that. When you're a little kid and you're abused horribly, if you're abused once and right after that abuse, you have the opportunity to go to an adult who loves you, mm-hmm. hopefully a parent, and they can listen to you and they can provide safety that you wanted while you were being abused. That abuse can be released at that time. But if your caretakers or your parents are the abusers, you have nobody to go to. Because the one thing a little kid wants is they want safety and protection. The one thing. Mm-hmm. If they don't get that, they will literally store all of that abuse in their little bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's not uncommon that you can hold on. In my case, this is the case. You can hold on to that your whole for decades into your life. And for men, it's not uncommon for that to come tumbling back in like your early 50s. Mm-hmm. And for women, it's seems to be earlier the case. But what you store in your body is you don't just store the memory of what happened to you. You store the scaredness, the fear, the horror, the sights, the sounds, the smells. And not only that, when you are traumatized, your body releases these hormones, that fight and flight hormones, and adrenaline and cortisol. It pumps it through your body. When these memories come back, that also comes back. All of it comes tumbling back. And it often comes back unannounced. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely horrible. And so when you read that little intro, it talks about living this twice. Well, that often is the case. One of the horrible things about living it twice, beyond the fact that that's just horrible, is you often don't know the duration of it. So imagine you're like a bus driver, and there's adult you, and on the back of the bus are a bunch of little yous. And let's say you were abused. Make this up. Let's say as a kid you were abused 100 times. There could be one, most likely there are 100 little yous on the back of your bus. And you have to go back to them as an adult. You have to go back to that trauma, to that event. And you have to clean it up. You have to clear it up. You have to release it. There's a process of doing that we could talk about. And you don't know often if there's 10 or 1,000 of these little yous because you've suppressed that memory for all these years. But when it comes tumbling back, it is awful, awful, awful. And so if you want to get into the healing side of that, that'd be fantastic. If you want to get into why these perpetrators do this, who they are, what kind of mentality these folks are, if you want to get into some of the actual abuse cases of what happened, I'm more than happy to go anywhere.
Wow. It's such a dramatic story, and what you've gone through is obviously really horrific. It almost sounds like, I love the bus driver with the little U's in the back. That sounds like very much like internal family systems, like going back and healing the child. But I'd love to hear what is that healing process, or what was that like, at least for you?
Okay. So the interesting thing about the healing process is there's a bit of confusion about it amongst the professionals out in the world, professional psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, counselors, etc. Some suggest you need to talk to a psychiatrist to heal. Some suggest a lot of body work.
Yeah.
There's tapping things to release this energy. There's EMDR stuff, eye movement stuff. There's all kinds of this and that. And I agree with some of that, and I don't agree with some of that. But in my case, such was the case that I literally, when the memories came to me, they came completely unannounced.
Mm.
And to describe one episode would be that this really, really painful, ugly thing would attack my body. It literally felt satanic, like something was attacking me. And it often would attack me at night, like at 2 a.m, you're asleep, and I would wake up in extreme panic. You could call it an extreme panic attack. And I literally felt like I was going to die. I could not even get out of bed and walk. I was just petrified in this place. My whole body would be shaking uncontrollably. My mouth would be dry. My heart would just be beating off. I've been to the ER room so many times because I thought I was going to die. And, well, I went through these episode experiences for 14 years without one memory. They just hit me, and I did not know what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And probably averaged about 3 or 4 a week. So I've been through thousands of these. And in the process, I went to every medical doctor I could think of, every holistic doctor, every spiritual healer, to try to figure out what was going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
No answers. So that alone is pretty, pretty awful.
Yeah.
And then about a year ago, the first memory came.
Wow.
And when the memories came, they were horrible.
Yeah.
And then I began with a good psychiatrist. I began the process of healing. And so what we went through is the adult me would literally go back in time and find that little guy who was hurting. And so for me, it was name the emotion. What was that little guy feeling at the time he was being abused? One of the stories is that kind of awful story is that once I was buried alive in this coffin. Mm-hmm. It's these perpetrators, they're the most awful people. They do the most awful things. And in the coffin was this adult body with its guts ripped out. It was a dead body. Mm-hmm. And so its chest cavity was like pulled open. And so they put this, imagine putting a little 4-year-old boy into this situation and then shutting the coffin. And then and you're like, well, why would they do that? You can imagine the horror that little kid went through and the screams and the pounding and et cetera. Well, when that memory comes back as an adult, all of that comes back.
Right.
And you are, as an adult, you're going to find that little kid and you're naming that emotion, like scared out of my head or whatever you want to call, whatever emotion you want to name it, being suffocated, being buried alive. Well, to add more strange psychoticness to this, if you will, when I was finally exhausted, almost couldn't breathe anymore, they opened up the coffin lid. And what does a little kid see? He sees adults laughing at him, which is not normal adult behavior. So psychologically, it just messes with you.
Yeah.
And so I had to actually go back there, find that little kid. And I had to help that little Jimmy find safety because that's all he wanted.
Right.
Now, I couldn't do it for him as me, the adult. But I had to go back and help this little guy literally rewrite the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it sounds like magic stuff, and it almost sounds unreal, but it works, and it works for me hundreds and hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. When I say it worked, meaning it scientifically, it's like the Matrix or something, where you're literally going back in time and you are literally changing events.
Yeah,
and so I couldn't go do it for this little guy, although I could help him. I could whisper in his ear. I could say, what do you want to do? How do you want to get out of this? And he could use anything he imagined. It could be magic. It could be whatever to find that safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did exactly that. And so we got out of that situation. And every time, and I had to do this hundreds of times, every time I would go back to a situation and change the narrative, all of that ugliness would leave my body. That episode, that one little kid on my bus of hundreds of these, I was able to release it.
Wow.
It's magical, but it's really it's really painful.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So if you're willing to face that ugliness and participate in that journey, it's really quite magical what you can do.
That still does to me sound very much like an IFS kind of process. I'm curious, does this have a name? Were you working with a practitioner? Was this a spiritual guide? Were you doing this on your own?
I was working with a psychologist who specializes in helping children who've been through sexual ritualistic abuse.
A very specific niche. That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. That is so beautiful. I'm so thankful that you were able to do that. And I think specifically to get back there and give him the tools because he is a kid. So allowing him to be creative in how he's going to get out of that. So I practice IFS and I'm an IFS informed trauma recovery coach. And in that, like sometimes the children are just putting down their pain, but sometimes they're fighting back to their parents or they're speaking to their parents, and you can go in there, and this gets really deep. So for people who are interested in learning more about this, it sounds like you had a very specific, very highly trained, very specific niche of a therapist. So I'm very grateful that you had that. And now you've turned this place. And how long have you been an artist, just kind of jumping into your artwork? Cause I see some of it behind you. Your website is filled with amazing work. Have you always had this gift? Is this something that's coming specifically out of the trauma and out of the body work that you've done?
Huh. That's a good question. I've been an artist my whole life.
Mm. Wow.
I don't know if the two relate 100%, but one of the things, let's say, that differentiates artists from maybe other people is they enjoy the chaos of when they create, and it's not an orderly process, and it's not a good job for people who are very orderly. Let's say people who make good managers at companies where everything is in order, like an accountant, everything has to be in order. And if it's not in order, they're like, their world's out of balance.
Yeah.
Well, artists typically work good in the chaos. It's just a trait. And so the term starving artist is often very appropriate, even though it's kind of funny. It's appropriate because if you manage your finances the way you work well in the chaos of your art, you're going to have chaotic finances. It's no wonder artists are not good with money typically.
Yeah.
But another trait possibly is that as a kid, because of this, I learned to be very comfortable in my own head.
Mm.
I could go in and I can be completely satisfied.
Mm.
I love people and I have tons of friends and this and that, but and so maybe I'm just going to guess here. Maybe some of that being comfortable in is because when you're abused that way, that is your only protection.
Mm.
You have nowhere else to go, so you go in, right?
Mm.
And that's your world, because the world out there is not very nice,
right? Yeah.
And sounds like you worked with many people who probably had similar traits, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I could have been an artist without all the abuse, but I think it's interesting because I had no memory of all this abuse for all these years until last year.
Mm.
And after all the memories tumbled in, it took about a year to process all of those. And another interesting thing is the damage, all of that hormonal dump on my body, the cortisol and adrenaline, one after another, when the memories came back, I went from really quite healthy to I lost a lot of weight. I could hardly walk from here to the next room. I became so weakened. Because they kept hitting one after another. I didn't get any break. I didn't get any chance to recover. And so that's another fun side effect that one has to face. Yeah. And I can see why people who go through this stuff, I can see why they turn to alcohol and drugs and other addictions. I can see why people commit suicide.
Yeah. And the healing process is, it's exhausting. The healing process is exhausting. There's no easy way around that. So, yeah.
You often don't know how long it's going to last. True. So when the first episode hit me 14, 15 years ago, I had no idea. I mean, after year 10, you're like, how long is this going to go on? After year 11, after year 12, so on and so on. And then when the memories came tumbling back, fortunately, it only took a year. But I had no idea. Each time a new one came back, I had no idea how many more little guys were on the bus.
Wow.
But
yeah,
the stories, so in my book, the first part of the book explains kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
In the last half of the book are 22 stories of actually going back to a specific trauma and how it was healed.
Yeah.
And they're fascinating. People think, or people often don't understand that sometimes a simple thing can be traumatic to a little kid, such as not being heard.
Absolutely.
Right? Such as having to carry all of that weight of the abuse on you for years and years as a kid. Such as not being able to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there are the more obvious ones of, you know, torture, from rape to being buried alive to, you know, witnessing other kids actually dying. Mm-hmm. But there's the horror that obviously is traumatic. But there are all these other all these other things that are byproducts of all of that, that are also traumatic. So I had to go back to all of those as well.
Yeah. The emotional release that happens there, you know, as you're healing, we often find trauma survivors becoming more and more playful and creative as they work on this inner child work, parts work, you know, childhood developmental trauma healing, whatever you want to call it, the play and the creativity that can come back that you didn't experience then. And I think that's really neat with your art, that you've kind of always had this art as this creative outlet. But do you find yourself lost in the play of art because there is so much safety now around you that you can just get lost in your mind and create art? Is that a playful thing for you?
Yeah, very much so. Also, too, it was when I would go back to find this little guy in the midst of something horrific, right?
Yeah.
And then whisper in his ear or help him or sometimes just watch him. Several of the resolves to the traumatic situation were him wanting to go play.
Yeah.
And all these episodes that resolve themselves through this little boy's actions,
yeah,
every single one of them was a surprise to me.
Yeah.
I had no preconceived idea, like, hey, let's go do this, or, you know. And I was surprised, quite a few of them, the resolve at the end was to want to go play. And where we went to play was a make-believe playground. Yeah. And we literally went there, and there were other kids. And it took that little guy a little bit of little time to integrate. But and not only did he want to play, he wanted to not stop playing.
Yeah.
And as the adult witnessing this action happening, I'm just amazed watching this little kid play, which is me. But and it took several of those for me to understand as an adult the value of being able to play without any fear, without any danger, let's say, just pure play. Because if there's danger, it's not really pure play, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the play aspect just shocked me many times.
Mm.
That's what he wanted. In a safe environment, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite beautiful.
The spontaneousness of the children, you know, and what they want to do. And some of the inner child healing that I've done and also with my clients, you know, sometimes they want to go to the beach and they want to float on a raft in the middle of a pool, and they want to do something that's very kid-like. And I love the way that you said that it's not really pure play if there's lack of safety, but even a perceived notion that there might not be safety, which would be like a hypervigilance, you're still not really playing. So when these children experience true and pure healing, now they can go off and have true and pure play. What's the inspiration behind this book? Who is this book for? Beautiful stories, by the way. I love this. Is this another outlet for you, or who do you imagine reading this book?
What I find fascinating after studying all this is, I don't know this, but I believe most people have some level of trauma.
Mm.
It may not be the hardcore abuse stuff, no doubt. But little Susie can get her pants pulled down on the playground, and it embarrasses her to such a degree that as an adult, she has a fear of being in front of people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I don't know this also, but I believe that anybody who has a level of trauma or anxiety, if they choose, can, and I don't know if this is true, but I surmise it might be, they can literally go back with the right coaching and et cetera to an event and change the narrative.
Yeah.
And literally release what has been stored in their body for decades. Literally release it all. Because you literally change it.
Yeah.
You provide safety.
Yeah.
Well, if it's still in you and you're still experiencing this anxiety as an adult, I don't think most adults realize that when they're experiencing that, it is literally stored in their brain. It's literally there. And it could be dripping little drips of hormones into you, stress hormones into you, and affecting you for decades, affecting your health, et cetera, et cetera. And just the idea that, really, I could get rid of that?
Mm-hmm.
It might be painful. I need the right guidance. I need to understand how this all works. But I can literally go back to that moment. And you don't have to remember all the details. In fact, I believe it's more common that when adults go back in time to a memory, that they don't remember all the details from A to Z. They remember fragments of it. But what's more important is to get in touch with that little you and understand the emotion that little you is feeling right there.
Yeah.
And help that little person provide safety once again. And it sounds too magical. It almost sounds too woo-woo or whatever, but every single time I did it, and some were a lot harder than others.
Yeah, sure.
And some were not play. Mm. Some, this little kid actually did some. He got his revenge, let's say.
Mm.
He was so, a couple episodes, he was so angry that these adults had killed his little friends.
Mm.
And I thought, I went and found him in this situation, and I, hey, do you want to get out of here? And instead, he said, I want a sword.
Mm.
I want to kill these people.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, the adult me is just like, eyes wide open, watching this little kid do such an awful thing to these adults who did such an awful thing to him. So it's not all roses.
Yeah.
It's not all pretty playgrounds.
Yeah.
But every single time it worked.
Yeah.
I have, the last episode that I had to deal with was probably towards the end of last year.
Mm.
And from then till now, who knows? They may come back. I'm not going to prophesy this or that, but that last one was the worst. And I have had no episodes since then.
Wow.
I feel great. And when I did this, when I went back, rewrote the narrative, provided safety, helped provide safety to this kid, it left me.
Yeah.
What had been stored in my body for 50, 60 years left me.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Wow.
That's the story of the book.
I love that. And it gives so much hope, you know, to people. You know, I really appreciate, I mean, trauma is trauma, of course, right? And I don't say little T or big T trauma. There's more chronic trauma and acute trauma, like a car accident or a plane wreck. But, you know, when it's the level of horrific, you know, sadistic, very ritualistic, chronic childhood, it adds these layers of like, there's no way. And if Jimmy Toro can find healing, then it gives a lot of hope for other people. So I appreciate you sharing your story, as harrowing as it is. So I really appreciate that you bring that inspiration that, I mean, that's the message that I preach, is that you have to find what works for you to find healing. Because I do believe it is possible for everyone. So I just want to honor you and acknowledge you for that. And I know you have, your nonprofit Rescue 11, and that protects children against predators. So tell us a little bit more about that before we wrap up.
Sure. So that, I've recently started that. And the idea there is to go into communities and at the high school level, start a club within a high school, Rescue 11 Club.
Yeah.
And have these young kids become like a hub of a community.
Mm.
So they will connect with like the police force and with the politicians, with churches, with nonprofits, with any groups who are interested in this idea of protecting their community against these predators.
Mm.
And making them aware that these predators are right in their community, and making them aware that these predators, they are the most awful individuals. I have a hard time calling them human. They wake up every day plotting and planning to steal and ruin your child's life.
Yeah.
They get joy out of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are organizations of them that they have to feed their organization. So if they steal a kid or kidnap a kid or get a young girl, that young girl, for instance, can often be raped thousands of times over lots of years.
Yeah.
And each time that young girl's raped, they get paid money.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes these kids will get killed and their organs will be harvested and they make money that way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they age out, etc. Well, because of this, these groups, they have to keep supplying their organization with young kids to satisfy the demand.
Yeah.
And some often little communities that have, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40,000 people in them, they are completely unaware that these awful individuals exist. And so my idea is to make communities aware and then make parents aware how these predators are getting to your kids online.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they use kids to get to your kids. They'll sit in a mall and they'll have a 14-year-old kid that they pay a lot of money to, who's probably going to grow up to be an evil person,
yeah.
Approach three young girls of the same age and entice them with money, with job, with a modeling opportunity, whatever they have to do. They're very clever at what they do.
Yeah.
And they're like lions watching a bunch of wildebeest run by, and a lion could spot the weak one. They could spot the young one, the aged one, the weak one. That's who they go after.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they sit in a mall watching a bunch of kids roam around the mall, they know they're good. They know who to target.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they achieve success too.
Yeah.
So we want to raise awareness that within communities that this is happening and what to do about it. That's the, so if any of your listeners want to be involved with Rescue 11 or donate or help any way they can, it's rescue11.org.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. And with that, continue on plugging your website. Where can people find you if they want to reach out? Are you on social media? How can they get the book?
Yeah. Jimmy Toro, it's spelled JIMMI. Mm-hmm. Toro.com, and everything's there. Social media links, the book, etc.
Awesome. Beautiful. And I'll have that linked up in the show notes for all the listeners and the watchers. And we really, really appreciate you, Jimmy. You're doing a great work. I'm definitely going to check out the Rescue 11 organization as well. And your artwork is on your website as well. And it's just, some of it's just absolutely magnificent. You do really great work. And I really appreciate you sharing your story, inspiring people, and what a powerful resource for people to be able to think. There's emotional healing. You know, this inner child work is real. It's very much there. So they can reach out to you, ask you more about that. They're more than welcome to reach out to me if they're interested in the IFS as well, because the inner child work is so important. And, you know, your children know what to do when you go back and they realize they have a safe adult who's going to help them.
Surprisingly, when they get a little bit of hope and a little help, they know exactly what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. The spontaneity is the cool part. You're kind of like watching a really cool movie play out, even though it's yourself. So I love that. I love that. Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much. You have a great rest of your day. We're going to have everything linked up for everyone to listen to and find you and reach out to you. So thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening or watching this episode of Trauma Survivorhood. For more info, show notes, and links, check out the episode guide below. Until next time, be well, survivors.